Welcome to the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Right this way. Your therapist will see you shortly. In the meantime, sit back, kick your feet up on the couch, and get ready to focus on adding very valuable tools to your marriage toolkit. And now your host and marriage counselor, David Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. What's up, guys? My name is David Taylor, and I am your host. Welcome to another information-packed episode of the Marriage Counselor's Corner podcast. This is episode number 10. And if you're new, if you ain't used to coming to the couch at the Marriage Counselor's Corner, well, guess what? This is the place where you're going to get credible and tangible marriage-related information from a licensed mental health counselor. Now, over my past 19 years of clinical experience, I've discovered some things that actually work to make your marriage healthy. So I want you to see these episodes as a masterclass in marriage, where I take a psychological and practical approach to marriage education and enrichment. And this episode, it may be a little controversial for some. It may offend some, but I know it's going to help a lot of people because this topic that I'm going to be discussing today, it's very important. But before we get into that, I do want to take a second to give a shout out to some people. Now, I'm not going to say no names, but I'm actually going to talk a little bit about those of you who have been listening to this podcast. More specifically, I want to shout out the top 10 countries that my listeners are from. I know this is weird, but as I'm looking at the analytics, it's incredible how far-reaching this podcast has become. Now, of course, the bulk of my listeners are from the U.S., so shout out to everybody here in North America. But I do want to also shout out all of my listeners who are in the U.K., so I want to give y'all a shout out because y'all are holding it down. And then Canada. Canada is number 3. Right? So I want to give a shout out to Canada as well. Ghana, I got to shout out people over there in Ghana, South Africa, Australia, Nigeria, Kenya, Germany, and India. So those are the other 9 countries. I actually have over 119 countries, but the top 10, like I said, was the US, UK, Canada, Ghana, South Africa, Australia, Nigeria, Kenya, Germany, in India. That's the top 10. But I have over 119 countries that listen to this podcast. That's incredible, y'all. It's crazy to think that this movement of marital enrichment and education is happening all around the world. And also, I want to give some local listeners a shout out. So the number one city that has the most listeners are in ATL. Yes, Atlanta, Georgia. So I want to give a shout out to all of my listeners, my special shout out to y'all over in the ATL. And also, there are over 3,800 cities that I have listeners in. So this is incredible that even with, you know, as new as this podcast is, I have 119 countries where I have listeners are from, and then over 3,800 cities here in the U.S., with ATL having the most listeners. So whatever y'all drinking down in the ATL, keep drinking it because this information is for y'all. So again, I just want to say thank you to all of my listeners for trusting my voice in this marriage space. A lot of y'all don't even know me and y'all are trusting what I have to say. And I really appreciate it. It's humbling. And you know what? It forces me to stay in the lab. It forces me to continue to do my research. Forces me to be accountable, have integrity as a husband, as a man, as a father, right? Knowing that I have individuals that are listening every week, waiting for new information to drop. So, man, it's encouraging. So I really just want to say thank you, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, let me get back to some business. So this is episode number 10. And in today's session, I'm going to be discussing a topic that, like I said earlier, can be controversial. But it's so relevant, and it's so relevant that Mandy and I, we literally have a business focused solely on this subject matter. That's how relevant it is, especially in today's day and age, especially with the decrease of value that's placed on marriage. Man, this is a topic that I want to really share. So today's episode will be on understanding the psychology of your reluctant spouse. And I understand that what I'm about to share may not resonate with some of you. And that's okay, because not everybody who are listening to my podcast have struggling marriages. But I know some of y'all do. So I got to make sure I don't miss you guys when I'm giving content, because I want to make sure this information is useful for everybody. And some of this information may offend others. Now, I will say to you guys, if it offends you, all that means is that you may not be ready to receive this information. And that's okay. Revisit it at a later time when you are in a different mind and heart space, because this information will be difficult to receive, because it's going to sound like, in some cases, I'm making excuses for very poor behavior. And if y'all know me, y'all know I don't make excuses for nothing. It is what it is. But some of y'all may hear that and there's nothing I can do other than just be more concise with my language, which I will try to do. So, but actually, you know what? Speaking of being concise, before I go any further, let me actually define what a reluctant spouse is. So I'll say it this way. A reluctant spouse is a married individual who is struggling with remaining committed to their marriage. And this struggle may manifest in the form of physical or emotional infidelity. It may manifest in an increase in disconnection or an increase in conflict, decrease in conflict resolution, or it may actually result in a recent separation or a pending separation or all of the above. Regardless, this particular spouse is reluctant about the marriage and they are having serious doubts on whether or not the marriage will succeed. Serious doubts on whether or not they want to stay married. And so you would have noticed they probably pulled back. They probably have stopped being intimate, or they've ventured into another inappropriate relationship, any of those things. And for some context, if you have read any of our first books, meaning Mandy's best-selling book, Motivated to Love, if you've read that book, or my best-selling book, I Said I Do, But Now I Don't, if you read any of those books, those two books, as well as Motivated to Stand, which is Mandy's follow-up book to her Motivated to Love book, any of those books will give you more clarity on what we mean when we talk about standing. We also have a program called The Strategic Stander, where we talk about this. We educate, we work with clients, we provide coaching and some counseling in certain forms that will help the stander be more efficient in their stand, and then also help the reluctant spouse. I do a lot of work with a lot of reluctant spouses, and it's a joy, because that is a difficult population to work with. But in any case, you'll know if you have a reluctant spouse, but check out some of those resources. You can find those on Amazon, and they'll help you to really get a more clear view on what that language is all about. And especially since I am a former reluctant spouse, not to say I'm the authority on this topic, but I think I know what I'm talking about with this, because I was deep in this reluctant space. And listen, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. And I'm not saying that to make a joke in terms of being the authority. Like, that's not a flex. That's not a good thing. I believe God gave me grace, but it's not a good thing. So anyway, let me also share why this information is important for your marriage. So first, if you are trying to understand what is going on in your marriage during this difficult season of your marriage, this information will be vital. Also, and more specifically, this information will help you to understand what is going on with your reluctant spouse on the inside, on a psychological level, right? Because a lot of times we look at their actions and their behaviors. And by the way, guys, I've already gotten started with the episode, even though this is still the introduction. I'm already in there. But a lot of times I've noticed that the reluctant spouses, their behaviors are very off-putting. What they say and what they do is very off-putting, right? And so it's easy to look at their behaviors and get offended and get distracted. And then if you're standing, you may not really understand what's going on, because you're so emotionally wounded by what they are doing to you and to the marriage. But so this information will help you to be more targeted in your prayer life. We believe that prayer is very vital to a successful stand. It's not the only thing, because I know some standers that pray and it ain't working. hear me clearly. I'm not knocking God. I'm just saying it requires more than prayer. But this will help you to be more targeted in your prayer life. Also, you'll make way less mistakes standing and doing things just out of emotion and reaction if you understand a lot of what's going on a psychological level with your reluctant spouse. And you can also better interpret and speak to their reluctant behaviors. It helps you to be more strategic, okay? Anyway, let me get started with the deep dive because I got a lot of information to share with y'all. And again, I know I say this with every episode, but just expect that from me from now on that, like I said, these are going to be masterclass type in terms of just the amount of information and content. So just take some notes and share this information with those who need it. So if you're doing well in your marriage, but you know folk that are struggling in their marriage, share this with them so that they could benefit from this information, okay? So let me get started with speaking on the one thing that your reluctant spouse's psychology is primarily built on. So their reluctance is built on one specific thing, just one. Now, it will seem like it's not, and a lot of their behaviors may not make a lot of sense. And it will be confusing because there's 3 to 4 types of reluctant spouses, right? You got the lost reluctant, the cold reluctant, the confused reluctant, which is more like a loss, right? But there are a few types of reluctant spouses. Check out my book. I talk about it in there. And all of their behaviors are hinged on one primary thing. Again, it may not look like it is, but I'm speaking from experience as a former reluctant spouse and working with a plethora of reluctant spouses, it all falls back to one thing. And that one thing that their reluctance is built on, this may not make sense until I explain it, so hear me out. But the one thing that their behavior is built on is survival. Yeah, I'm sure you didn't think that was going to be it, but it's survival. And let me explain. But to do so, I got to give a brief history lesson. Any of my psychology majors or therapists out there that have heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we're going to talk about that for a little bit, and then we're going to move forward. Now, if you were watching, looking at what I'm looking at, you would see a pyramid, and Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's a pyramid, and at the bottom of the pyramid are basic needs. So think of your physiological needs, like food, water, warmth, rest. And then above your physiological needs is your safety needs. And those will be your safety and security, right? So we as humans, we need to feel secure. We need to feel safe. That's how we survive. And then above that, you go to your psychological needs. That's having feelings of belonging and love. That's intimate relationships. That's friendships. Because after all, as humans, we are relational creatures. So that's a legitimate psychological need to have intimate connections and friendships and to feel love and to feel like I'm part of a group. And then above that are your esteem needs. These are also psychological needs, but they are higher. And your esteem needs are the desire for prestige, to feel accomplishment, to feel significant. And y'all know I talk about how husbands marry for significance, right? And for validation. Well, that's part of those esteem needs. And then above that, these are the highest needs. But it's also the last most likely thing to get because it's at the top of the food chain and it's not one of the basic needs. But these are called self-fulfillment needs. And that's the need of self-actualization, right? Achieving one's full potential, whether it's creativity in your activities, but it's finding a place where you're living a purposeful life. And that's self-actualization, coming into your prime, right? Getting into your supreme form. Now, this 5-stage model, and remember, you got your physiological needs, that's 1. Safety needs is 2. Belonging and love is 3. Esteem is 4. Self-actualization is 5. So this 5-stage model can be divided into what Maslow calls deficiency needs and growth needs. And this is going to be a little psychobabble for a little bit, so just kind of hear me out. Stuff is not as relevant, but it's important if you want to just kind of have this at the back of your mind. But the first 4 levels, so physiological, safety, belonging and love, and esteem, The first four levels are often referred to as deficiency needs. And the top level, which is the self-actualization needs or self-fulfillment needs, rather, this top level is known as growth or being needs. Now, deficiency needs arise due to deprivation and are said to motivate people when they are unmet. When these needs are unmet, they motivate you to do something, right? This is why they're called deficiency needs. Also, the motivation to fulfill these needs will become stronger the longer the duration they are denied. So if I'm hungry and I don't have food, the longer I go without food, the hungrier I will get. The same with water, right? Especially if I'm in a need for that. Safety and security. If I don't have security and safety, the longer I don't have it, the longer I desire it, or the stronger that desire is. So just keep that in mind. Now, Maslow initially stated that individuals must satisfy lower level deficit needs before progressing on to meet higher level growth needs. However, he later clarified that satisfaction of needs is not an all or none phenomenon, admitting that his earlier statements may have given the false impression that a need must be satisfied 100% before the next need emerges. And you can read the article where he discusses this. But when a deficit need has been more or less satisfied, it will go away, and our activities become habitually directed towards meeting the next set of needs that we have yet to satisfy. These then become our salient needs. However, growth needs continue to be felt and may even become stronger once they have been engaged. Okay, so just a little background information on this. So how does this relate to your reluctant spouse? Okay, I'm done with the history lesson. But what has this got to do with anything? And hopefully you were understanding the nuance of what I was saying, or at least you can go back and reference it because of what I'm about to say. Now, remember, buried deep beneath your reluctant spouse's offensive behaviors and their cold demeanor is their need to survive. Now, remember, if you're tracking the Maslow hierarchy of needs, the safety needs, that's the second level, part of the basic needs. More specifically, their reluctance is a reaction to a subconscious and unknown safety and security need. Now, please hear me clearly, because it's going to sound like I'm giving unhealthy rationale or justification for their bad and heinous behaviors in the marriage. I'm not. I'm describing it on a psychological level. I'm not pardoning their behavior, hear me clearly, but I'm describing what the behavior represents. That way, when you're dealing with them, you understand what's going on beneath the surface, so you can speak specifically to that thing, not the behavior that they're demonstrating, if that makes sense. Now, let's talk a little bit about safety and security needs, because after all, this is part of the human basic needs that we all have. So let's talk about what this actually looks like. You'll be surprised when I go even deeper. As humans, we all have certain safety and security needs. Now this is normal, and this is healthy to what it means to be a human. This is healthy to the human experience, okay? The abnormal or unhealthy part is when these needs cause us to act in a manner that causes damage or harm to ourselves or to others. The reluctant spouse, though unaware, is driven to meet these needs mainly without any regard for what it will cost them, or for the matter, anyone else, especially their spouse and the marriage and even their kids. For most of us, that safety and security need would have to be very extreme for us to do something like that, to compromise other people. But for them, it's not extreme. It's just distorted. Hear me clearly. Their safety and security need is distorted. Think about someone with a phobia, right? Say, like someone who has an irrational fear to a certain stimulus. That's what a phobia would be. So as an example, put a spider in a car with a driver who has arachnophobia. Heck, you don't even have to have arachnophobia. Put a spider in a car, put a bee in a car with someone who's afraid to be stung. And they may literally crash the car in an attempt to not come in contact with that spider or in an attempt to not get stung by the bee. Think about that. So in their attempt to avoid their fear, they actually endanger themselves and others. That may be an extreme example, but it's an example of what it looks like for a reluctant spouse. They have this need. They're trying to get this need met. And in doing so, they're overreacting potentially to the stimulus. So the person with this phobia, their need is to be safe and secure away from the spider. And so in an attempt to capture that need or satiate that need, they overreact, they swerve, and you can put yourself in harm's way by doing that, okay? Now, to go a step further, your reluctant spouse, then, they're searching. Their reluctance is their pursuit to an often unknown solution to an unknown safety need. So I already told you earlier, confusion or a confused reluctant spouse is one of the types of reluctant spouse. And most reluctancy, very few reluctant spouses are cold. Most of them are either lost and or confused. And if you look at them, though, they may appear like they know the answer or they have an idea of what the answer is or what they want, what their needs are. But trust me, they don't. And speaking from past experience, I was very convincing to Mandy that I knew what I needed and what I was lacking, only to find out afterwards that I was extremely ignorant to what was really going on beneath the surface. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Now, as I've said before, their reluctance is about safety and security. See it as an act of self-preservation. Now, self-preservation is another way of saying selfishness, but selfishness often has an intent that's usually negative. Self-preservation doesn't always have a negative intent. It can, meaning the person could be doing this willingly and on purpose, which again, it's going to come off like that. And this is why it may sound like I'm taking up for them, but I'm not. Trust me. Hear me clearly. Their behaviors are wrong and bad. Okay. We got that covered. But understanding the why behind it will help you to understand what they're looking for. Okay. Their reluctance is often an act of self-preservation. So keep that in mind. Often. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a little deeper. Sometimes they're just out to do horrible things, and those individuals shouldn't be married to begin with. Let me give an example just so that you understand what we're talking about. And instead of using some, you know, conglomerate of clients that I've worked with, I'll just use myself, put myself on the chopping block. And many of you guys that have either read my books or listened to any of our earlier podcasts, this information will sound very familiar. But just to give you an idea of what this looks like, how this manifests. So for me, I grew up in a household with a single mother and three additional sisters. So it was four of us and my mom. My mom and dad divorced when I was about 4 years old. My dad moved out. And it wasn't like he was a deadbeat dad or anything like that. But because they got a divorce, he moved out. And I guess they arranged it to where my mom would keep us four kids. And so my dad left the state. We lived with my mom. We moved around a bit. But I didn't grow up with my biological father in the house. Many of you guys know this. I had a few stepdads, but none of them took the place of my biological dad. And as a byproduct, I grew up from four all the way up until, you know, my mid-20s, not aware of what I was lacking. So fast forward from, you know, my childhood to my teenage and adolescenthood, I masqueraded as a very charismatic, extroverted, social person, extremely flirtatious, very arrogant. Had this persona that I knew what I wanted. At 14, I started dating. At 15, I started working. At 16, I bought my first car. And from that point on, in my mind, I was a man. I was done. Nobody could tell me nothing. And that's how I carried myself. And so in school, I tried to be the smartest person, but I also wanted to be the coolest person. I also wanted to be the most athletic person. By the way, I wasn't top of the list on none of those. Just putting that out there. So I'm not trying to make it seem like I was like the top of the food chain in school. But I hung out with all the cool kids. I hung out with all the smart kids. I hung out with all the athletes, played sports, cheerleader, lifter. I wanted to be around the girls, right? This was my way, was trying to be something for everyone so that I could receive something. Again, I was oblivious to that. I just thought that's who I was. So fast forward a little further, end up in college. I joined a fraternity. And in my opinion, I joined a fraternity because I was like, look, these guys seem like they are celebrities. God dang, I go to the parties and all the girls are looking at them and they're doing their line, they're strolling and taking their shirts off. And I'm like, you know what? This is the place to be. So I joined the fraternity, not because I wanted to have a brotherhood or be part of a community where I could do community service and scholarly aptitude. No, that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for the benefits, okay, the proceeds. And it just so happened that joining a particular fraternity granted me access to all those things. Again, I'm not bragging. I'm just giving you guys background information on old David. This is a young me. This ain't who I am today, but this was a young me. The point is, I wore a mask. And I tried to be this very flirtatious, charismatic, outgoing, sociable individual because I got all the attention from that, all the proceeds. I felt all the affirmation, all the validation. I wasn't aware of that, though. I just was aware that, oh, this feels good. Let me do it more. Oh, and I forgot to add also, at 12 years old, I stumbled across pornography and it changed my life forever. Okay, pornography from 12 to like 24, I wrestled with pornography. And nobody really knew because, of course, who's going to say that? Where I'm from, it's normal. It's okay. But for 12 years of my life, I had this, I wouldn't say addiction, but definitely a dependency of type relationship with pornography. Learned a lot of stuff that I shouldn't have been learning. But again, that shaped my version of masculinity. It shaped how I presented myself. I understood, oh, women prefer bigger, faster, stronger. So in high school, I naturally wear a size 11 shoe. Well, I was buying size 12, right? I would fudge my height a little bit. I was trying to be all things to everybody. You get the point. Bottom line, move forward, go to college. After college, I graduate, go back to college, graduate, and now I'm working for the university and I meet Mandy. Mandy comes in and she's in graduate school at the time that I meet her. And if you would have saw her back then, she has the same air about her now, but she's mine. So she probably don't wear it as as public. I think she probably still do because I don't be seeing her at the job. I think she may carry herself like this at the job. But when I met Mandy when she was 22, she had this air about her. And it was sensual, but it wasn't sexual, if that makes sense. Like it was like a Felicia Rashad where you knew someone important was walking in the room. And so immediately, and I was exiting a bad relationship. A lot of that was on me again, but I was exiting that relationship. I saw her. We started meeting. We started, you know, talking and stuff like that. And the very first thing she told me in our very first interaction was, I could see you being my leader. And let me tell y'all, it was something about hearing that that shifted everything for me. It changed the trajectory. I, in that moment, told myself she was going to be my wife because of that one statement. Remember that. So let's fast forward. We're dating. And at some point in the dating process, we dated for 9 months before I proposed. And then we were engaged for 11 months before we got married. But during that process, during that dating process, a shift happened. Initially, I was smitten head over heels for Mandy, obsessed with her, couldn't think of nobody but Mandy. And then there was a shift that took place in our relationship. And if you listen to any of our older podcasts, I don't want to bore you with all the details, but the point is, there was a shift that took place that shifted how I saw her. And that was the first fracture that happened. Now, again, we both were coming into relationships with our own trauma. So she brought stuff with her, and if you read her book, Beauty and the Brokenness, she explains a lot of that. Like, and I'll leave that up for you guys to figure it out and find. But she talks, everything is public, so I could say it, but I don't want to. I'm looking at my time, and I'm already, you know, I want to keep this brief. But we both brought stuff. I brought issues from my childhood that I wasn't even thinking about. She brought stuff from her childhood, and those two things, those two dynamics, started to collide. And when they collided, it set forth a reaction and a dynamic that would follow us into marriage. And eventually, as we got married, I started to feel, this is me, it had nothing to do with really Mandy at all, but it was all, a lot of it was on me. I'd say 90-10, because we had a dynamic that we shared that we brought with us. But I started to feel like, wait a minute, did I make a mistake? Because earlier in the relationship, I was feeling, oh, Mandy, like she worships me. I feel, now she didn't really worship me, but I'm using colorful language here, guys. She didn't worship me, okay? I was not God to her, but meaning she put me on a pedestal. And as a byproduct, I put her on a pedestal. But guess what happened? The moment I stopped feeling like I was on that pedestal, guess what I did? I removed her from the pedestal. Stop me when it's making sense, if anybody else is guilty of this thing. And this became another dynamic. And all of a sudden, as a husband, I started to feel like I was failing. I had incurred a tremendous amount of financial debt because some very stupid decisions that I made as a young guy, made a lot of financial decisions that shouldn't have made. And as a byproduct, added additional weight to my shoulders. Now I'm starting to feel like a failure. Now my wife is not feeling like I love her as much, or we're not connecting, and she's asking for things and wanting more and wanting more. And I'm feeling slowly but surely like, wait a minute, I don't know if this is what I'm supposed to do, right? And all of a sudden, now I have this bent towards, wait, this is, I don't think this is it. And that's all the enemy needed. And I'm not blaming the devil. Okay. This is a joint effort between me and the enemy when this happened. But that's all it was needed was an open door and a mindset to say, wait a minute, perhaps this marriage is not for me. And I slowly started to shift away, drift away. And prior to Mandy, I had never committed infidelity in any relationship. But once I got married, I broke the cardinal rule. And I transgressed those boundaries, those sacred vows that we shared. I transgressed those, entered into an emotional affair, and you guys know the rest was history, okay? At that point, I was reluctant, and I went as far as telling my wife that I was no longer in love with her. I didn't want to be married anymore. Listen to some of our earlier podcasts where you get even more information about this, or read any of our earlier books. I Said I Do, But Now I Don't, or Motivated to Love, or Motivated to Stand. You'll get a lot more information, a lot more of the juice behind it, but I'm giving you guys the Cliff Notes version. But anyway, so I became a reluctant spouse, but Mandy stood. She stood on her business, 10 toes, and she fought for the marriage. And thank God I had a wife that was willing to pray for me and to, yes, tolerate a lot of stupidity and brokenness. And I know I can hear it now. Why do we as wives always have to? I get it. I hear all that all the time. And if I had more time, I could speak to that. And it's okay. You're right. You shouldn't have to. Husbands, we need to do better, right? Y'all need to do better, husbands. But let me stay on track. So anyway, Mandy stood, fought for the marriage. We reconciled. And it was towards the end of the reconciliation process for me when I was able to have this revelation of what exactly I was, what was going on? Why was I reluctant? And for me, what it boiled down to was I had this safety and security need of validation and affirmation. This need to get something from Mandy that my father never gave me. Now, again, hear me clearly. I'm not downing my father. That's my dude. Love him. But when I was a young boy, there were things I needed that I didn't get. And it wasn't because he didn't want to give it to me. They got a divorce. So he lived in a completely different state. It was hard for us to always go travel back and forth. And so as a byproduct, there were things that as a teenage boy, porn was teaching me that my father wasn't, right? If you guys understand. Or my peer group was teaching me that my father didn't. And it also shaped my perception of masculinity. And therefore, I carried this mask that I wore because it got me things. And what I learned was that for me, I was looking for my father's validation and my father's affirmation. I had my mom's, but I was looking for my father. I was looking for a man to come into my life and say, you are now a man. You're official. This is how you treat a woman. This is how you love a woman. This is how you handle conflict. This is how you handle sexuality and yourself as a man. And when you're, you know, when you look at a woman, this is how you should perceive her. Like, I didn't get any of that. but I needed that. And as a byproduct, I had to fill in the gaps. Long story short, those things impacted how I showed up in my marriage. And as a byproduct, I started using my marriage to meet those unmet needs. I started using my marriage. If I felt safe, it was because I was feeling affirmed and validated. But when I didn't get that affirmation and that validation, guess what? I started to feel unsafe. And guess what happened? Spider in the car. I shift and turn and twist and turn to get rid of the spider. Now I'm crashing. And I'm not even thinking about the fact that I got another person in the car with me relying on me to drive safe. Okay? Get the analogy? It goes deep. It goes even deeper. But the self-preservation, right? My reluctance was my way, my selfish way of trying to preserve something that I had never had. And I thought I was supposed to get married and get that in my marriage when my marriage is not supposed, listen, your marriage is not supposed to meet your unmet needs. Your marriage is not supposed to fix in you what your spouse did not break. I went to my marriage for Mandy, bless her heart, to fix me when, and again, it wasn't a conscious decision, it was subconscious, but I was attracted to her because she appeared to have the things that I never had. And therefore, of course, I'm going to go and try to get what I never got because that's what I needed. And she's not the person to fix that. I learned a very valuable lesson. Okay? But it was based off of this desire, this act of self-preservation. And I was trying to get something that Mandy was not supposed to give me. And I used my marriage inappropriately and did some very damaging things. Thank God for grace and forgiveness. But man, this is, listen, and I work, I was just in the office today. Work, I ain't going to even go there. Let me stop. But I work with this stuff. And so I have a heart for it, but it also hurts me because of the pain that I know I caused Mandy. And I tell people all the time, I'm paying back restitution for the rest of my life for the damage that I caused. And that's my choice, not Mandy's choice. I've chosen that I'm going to serve her for the rest of my life because of the damage that I caused in the first 3 to 4 years of our marriage. Okay. So that's my decision, but it's to make sure that we never go back there. But the point is, there are things that if you understand, right, if you're able, if you could discover certain things regarding what they're looking for, it will help you to understand how to pray, how to position, how to interact with them, what to say, what not to say. And so in order to discover what they're looking for, right, I just gave you my brief but maybe long Cliff Notes version of my journey. But in order for you guys to discover what your reluctant spouse is looking for, you know, what their safety and security needs are, you're going to want to focus on 5 key areas. See, I've done the research. I'm going to give you 5 areas and then we're going to wrap up because I'm already almost at 40 minutes. Now, here's the first thing that I want you to focus on that will help you to understand their reluctance and more specifically, what safety and security need are they trying to get through the marriage? Okay. My safety and security need was validation and affirmation. What are theirs? So first place you want to look is their past trauma. Remember, the greatest trauma for me was the divorce of my mom and dad. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know how impactful it was until I was older, but that was the greatest trauma for me. I don't blame them, of course. They were young. They were, you know, they were trying to do the best they could. They lacked resources as well, but that was traumatic for me and my sisters. Okay. And so look into their past trauma. If you don't know, you should be asking questions. You should know your spouse's traumatic past, their history, were they neglected? Were they abandoned? Were they sexually molested? Right? Like there's a lot of stuff that if you guys don't know, that could be fueling their behaviors and you're sitting in ignorance. So ignorance should not be an excuse at this point, unless they have just completely said they're not going to tell you, then you should be doing your due diligence to get that information. The second thing I want you to really have awareness of is their relationship with their parents while growing up. I had a very close relationship with my mom. I would say I was a mama's boy, but I didn't have that close of an intimate emotional relationship with my dad, mainly because, again, geographically, and back in the 80s and 90s, I wasn't getting on the phone to call nobody like that, right? We didn't have the internet. We didn't have FaceTime, none of that. So I didn't have that strong of a relationship with him growing up like I do now. But check into their relationship with their parents. Is there one parent that was missing or treated them a certain way? What's the ideal version of that person? Because chances are they married you to get the ideal version of them in you. And you represented that, all the while also representing the parent that they did get that probably caused them the most pain, right? Rewind that, listen to it again. It'll make sense. The point is, study their relationship with their parents and what was that like growing up. The third thing I want you to focus on is their relationship with marriage while growing up. Now, what I'm about to say may seem like I'm putting my parents under the bus. I'm grown, they grown, I ain't putting them under the bus, but I'm just speaking truth. I didn't have a healthy relationship with marriage growing up because I didn't see a healthy relationship or marriage growing up, okay? Again, this is not an indictment. So if mom, you listening, or dad, you listening, I love y'all. Y'all know the truth. y'all will admit this too. But I didn't get a healthy model of marriage while growing up. And as a byproduct, you can only reproduce what you have. You can only reproduce after your kind. If I grew up ignorant to what a healthy marriage is, guess what I'm going to give my marriage? A bunch of ignorance, a bunch of mask, a bunch of mess, right? So because I didn't have no model, what did I learn about marriage? Nothing. I didn't even see a man treating a woman in a nurturing, gentle, loving way. I don't know what emotional protection was. I didn't see any of that. And again, I know that may sound like an excuse, but sometimes the truth is just the truth and we got to accept it no matter how it makes us feel, okay? I didn't have that model growing up. So check into their relationship with marriage growing up. What was their relationship like towards marriage? Did they see it? Was it a model? Was it inappropriate? Was it just not there at all? That's going to be impactful in helping you to understand what they're looking for. Chances are, if they missed out on a model of marriage, they're looking for something similar or what that healthy version of marriage would produce. I was looking for a place to feel affirmed and validated, which, by the way, in a healthy marriage, the kids will feel that, right? I was looking for that. And when Mandy came talking about some, and y'all, she was running game, talking about some, I can see you as my leader. Guess what? That's to a struggling, I was at the time 23, 24, I don't know, something like that. Somebody who, I'm young, trying to find myself, trying to understand my identity and my purpose, and then some fine thing, talk about some, I can see you being my leader. You know what? That's it. It's a wrap. It was that easy. Because I was so hungry for a sense of validation and affirmation. And when she said that, to me, that was the ultimate stamp of approval. That was all I wanted to hear from my dad, okay? Number four, look into their main areas of inadequacies and or insecurities. Again, I just kind of mentioned a few of things that I missed out on growing up that stifled how I developed, but those created areas of inadequacies. I did not know how to love at all. I was very selfish, very egotistical, very prideful. As any of my friends at that time in my life, in my mid-20s, early 20s, and they would tell you, yeah, that was David. Okay. I had to evolve a lot. And thank God that they were patient with me as well. Some of them, we probably ain't friends no more, which is okay. But anyway, look into the main areas of inadequacies, look into their insecurities. What areas of insecurities? And most guys, like I know for me, I hid my insecurities well. You wouldn't have known that I had any insecurities because, well, I hid them. I wore a mask. But in marriage, your insecurities come to the top. It's hard to wear the mask long-term in marriage. So make sure that you're looking for those areas of inadequacies and insecurities as well. And then lastly, why did they marry you? What void did you fill for them in their life? Go back to the earlier episode, I think episode 3, where I talk about why did you get married, or maybe episode 2, and check into that, right? Like, why did they marry you? What void did you appear to fill? What ideal version of their parents do you represent? Okay. Once you know this information, and listen, I'm out of time already because I'm already over 45 minutes, but this information would be just those five areas. If you can write this stuff down, shape this into your profile, your reluctant spouse's profile, this gives you an advantage on how to present yourself, how to communicate, how to pray, what arguments and conflicts to avoid, what boundaries to put in place. Like this, if those five things can really help you to be more strategic with your stand. Now, I'm not going to be able to go into the next phase of this in this episode because there's a lot more. This is just like the tip of the iceberg. But if you have any questions for me, y'all know how to get a hold of me. If you're interested, let's say you're standing for your marriage and you don't know what to do and you need help. You're confused with, okay, should I stay? Should I leave? Listen, just go to our Mastering Marriage site. Just go to masteringourmarriage.com. And then under the services tab, the very first tab says standing for your marriage. Click on that. It'll take you to a website where you can learn more about what our strategic standard is all about. This is not I didn't do this podcast to promote it, just to inform you guys. But for those of you, because this program ain't for everybody, but those of you who feel like you're really called to stand for your marriage and you're struggling, your spouse is struggling, and you guys need to figure it out, come, you know, email me, text me, call me, and, you know, we can work together and do some good things to help you guys overcome where you are. All right, so let me wrap up here and let me give you guys an action item and then I'll be done. So I want you guys to review these five key areas, and then I want you to see, like, how much information do I have? Write down, get your notebook, pen and pad, and write down as much information as you have about your spouse, your reluctant spouse, in those five areas. Again, the first one was their past trauma. The second one was their relationship with their parents while growing up. Third one, relationship with marriage while growing up. The fourth one, the main areas of inadequacies and or insecurities. And then lastly, why did they get married? What void do you appear to fill? Answer those. Get as much detail as you can possibly be, because this information will be very, very useful in helping shape your stand. Okay, I'm done. I know that was a lot. I didn't expect to go close to 50 minutes, but here we are. So guys, I'm going to wrap up here. And that's it for today's episode, where we discussed the psychology of your reluctant spouse. Listen to this if you need to. Again, share this with those that need it. And my hope and prayer is that this information is useful. And I really appreciate you guys joining me for another information-packed session at the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Join me in the next episode, where we're going to talk about another topic. I got some ideas. I got some subjects that I want to cover, but I'm going to wait for more clarity on which direction to go. But join me for episode 11 next week, because it's coming out next week. And hopefully you have already subscribed to this podcast. But if not, what the heck are y'all waiting on? Subscribe so that you can get notifications as soon as these episodes go live. And I drop these at midnight. So some of you guys that's on the West Coast, you're going to get them earlier than midnight. But, you know, share these, like, comment, give me an honest rating and review if you haven't done so already. And please don't forget, if you have any questions, go to marriagecounselorscorner.com. Leave me your questions there. And I'm done. It's a wrap. Go out, be safe, be strategic, get some information in you, and I will talk to y'all soon. Deuces.
Thanks for stopping by for your seat on the couch at the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Remember, go to marriagecounselorscorner.com to schedule your next session. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you never miss a session. We look forward to having you back on the couch soon. Bye-bye now.